Welcome to the Dr. Kira Banks podcast, formerly known as Raising Equity. Your host is Dr. Kira Banks. On this episode, Dr. Banks talks an anonymous guest, Alex, through navigating difficult conversations. Podcast written and produced by Kira and Aaron Banks. Sound and video editing by Aaron Banks. All names of persons and organizations have been changed to protect their anonymity. All voices, where necessary, have been altered with the use of AI technology. That's right. Real stories, made-up names, fake voices. Have tea to spill or something you want to ask Dr. Banks? Contact her at kirabanks.com/stories or stories@raisingequity.org.
Coalitions are the way that we have made change in our society. And that's the way movements have worked. And so I don't want us to be in our bubbles. I don't want us to be in our silos. And sometimes it takes being in conversation with people, being in relationship over time to shift and move them. I never want someone to feel like they have to have a conversation that's going to put themselves at physical risk or harm them in terms of their mental health. But I've gotten a lot of questions from folks who really want to be able to engage in conversations with people who think differently than they do, who believe differently than they do, but they just don't know how. And so I want us to model what that can look like and to think about skills and strategies that we can use if we want to be in conversation with people that believe differently than we do. Today we have with us Alex, and I'm going to let Alex introduce us to what she's navigating, but we're going to spend this episode supporting Alex and thinking about how she can not only engage with folks who have different belief systems than she does, but also take care of herself in the process. So welcome, Alex. Thanks so much for joining us, and thanks so much for reaching out.
Thanks for having me. I am a white female liberal Democrat from the Midwest living in a very red southern state. So I do feel very out of place to tons. And I also work in 911 dispatch, which provides its own dynamic. And recently having trouble finding community and navigating conversations, whether it be with coworkers, friends, or just general public while staying true to my values. I want to have respectful conversations, but I'm often faced with aggression, defensiveness, authority.
Yeah. So, I mean, in your message where you asked about, you know, how to have these conversations, I think you said, how do we navigate conversations post-Trump election when people seem to be especially aggressive, defensive, or polarized? And I just want to name that it sounds like in your workplace that it's not necessarily a safe place to have the conversations. That it's not a place where there's room for it, or it would be tolerated.
I asked Alex if they could tell me a story of when this aggression or defensiveness has shown up at work. She proceeds to tell me about a time when President Trump was on the campaign trail and there was radio chatter talking about a gun store being on lockdown. So she asked a question about safety, which she thought was straightforward. However, Alex's supervisor took offense to the assumption of violence and was not amused.
So I didn't know what was happening. I didn't know if there was a riot threat or something going on. And they said there was a dignitary coming into town. And so I asked, I made the question to my supervisor, had there been, you know, threats of like Trump supporters coming in and doing something? And she got very, very defensive. Because, like, she was a Trump supporter, and I was surrounded by Trump supporters. And she said, oh, because all Trump supporters do that, and kind of chastised me. And I was just shocked because that's actually happened. It was post January 6th. So I had a very valid question, you know, asking, needing an officer safety for my safety. So I'm aware, like, is there a security issue that we might be having that I need to make sure that I'm protecting myself and others. And it was just, it was met with a lot of aggression.
And it's interesting because in that situation, I think you handled that well for yourself, right? You asked a question. It was a reasonable question. You didn't have all the context they did. It was based on, you know, like you said, factual things that happened. And so I'm thinking there, you know, like if that were to happen again, what your options might be, what you could decide to do for yourself. And I think You know, one thing I want to name is that your decision to not push further and to just kind of, you know, disengage probably kept you safe, and it kept you safe from further escalation, right? I think sometimes people will make snarky comments and make aggressive comments. And if you have the energy, not that you have to, but if you have the energy to respond in a way that's very matter of fact, that's not meeting their aggression with aggression, that can sometimes disarm folks.
Scabund.
Right? So like and it also could antagonize them, right? So that's why you have to read the situation, right? But there is an opportunity to say, you know, this is where I was coming from. I actually didn't mean to suggest that all Trump supporters believe this way. But given these other data points, I wanted to just make sure I understood what we were navigating in terms of our office and our work, period. Right. And something like that might give you an opportunity to feel like you don't have to just squash and silence and swallow. Right.
Either.
And also, you know, you're being respectful. You're responding. You had data points that were related to your job. So it sounds like the workplace is not the place to have those conversations unless someone is willing to engage in dialogue. So something I often ask folks is like, are you asking how to have a dialogue or are you wanting to engage in a debate, right? And are there ever political dialogues that happen in your workplace?
I've tried to create a couple on voting day. I came into work and I had already voted early. I was, you know, very excited. But the first day of early voting, you know, when I can make sure my vote was uncounted. And actual voting day, I was working, came in, and I had a coworker say, oh, Nadasha, did you vote today? And I was like, oh, cool, she's really excited about it too. And I said, oh, I already voted early. And then she started marking it, saying, oh, I'm registered to vote, but I don't vote. It's just so dumb, and they both suck anyway.
If you have someone who you really think is open to a dialogue, I often encourage folks to do a couple things. One is, if it's appropriate, to mirror back what the person said and then to be curious. So in that case, you might say, oh, you know, I hear you feeling like it won't matter and that they're kind of the same and that your vote doesn't count. I'm also curious how you came to have that perspective. Or tell me a story about what has led you to see the election in this way. Do you think that would have felt possible with her?
I think so. So she is not an aggressive person typically. She might be very outspoken, but I think that we could have a respectful conversation. So I think that would work for her.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that approach is a kind of a go-to of to mirror back, to repeat, to reframe so that someone knows that you heard them, and then to ask a question, because that could have given you an opportunity to understand what she was meaning by that. Mirroring back and being curious or asking a personal story might work there.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. And it's something that I can definitely take into account, put it in like my little diary of tools, mm-hmm. and take that with me and just have that in the back of my head.
Yeah. And sometimes when we do that for folks, when we listen and then we're curious, they'll then ask us, or there'll be an opening for us to share what we think. And so then it's not just saying like, this is what I think. You've listened, you've repeated, you've mirrored, you've asked a question, asked a personal story, and maybe even then after that, kind of acknowledge that story and understand or have some empathy, and then you could share your perspective.
What?
Before we wrapped, Alex posed a question about how to deal with people who were saying things that aren't true. I share my thoughts about when I respond, but I'm also starting to get a sense that Alex is frustrated across the board, not just at work. She's mad that so much misinformation is being spewed so freely and wondering how she can stop it. My concern for her is that she's approaching interactions like she needs to police people rather than engage them. But as you listen, you can see my response doesn't feel like enough to her.
Is there a situation, and I think this is one of my questions as well, where if someone is blatantly saying something most untrue, do you try to challenge that? How do you approach that? Or is it just case by case deciding whether or not they would be receptive and open to having a dialogue? And then you need to like demurring thing and then ask questions? Or is there a different later approach, something that's very blatantly not true?
So I'm going to give a flippant answer and then a more academic answer. My flippant answer is, it depends on if you have time that day.
Okay.
Right?
Right.
Because you know most likely that you say something to correct that person on social media and they're going to have a retort and it's going to become a back and forth. And it's like, literally, do you have time? Do you have the energy? And then the more academic answer is, what are you desiring from that relationship? Right? So if this is my long lost cousin who I don't see, not even on major holidays, maybe every few years, and they're posting something blatantly incorrect on social media, my response is probably going to be to roll my eyes and keep it moving. But if this is my cousin who I do see at every major holiday and we're on a family group chat together, my response might be different. I might challenge that person. I might be curious with that person to see how much room there is and could we have a dialogue. So I think it depends on if you have time and what you want from that relationship.
Okay.
What do you think?
I think I kind of struggle with that because how are we able to build that community and create change for people who are so polarized and they don't want to hear anything different? Like, how are we going to make progress? Or is it just specifically with relationships that you already have?
So I think we have to think about it on a couple of levels. So we're probably not going to make progress one social media argument at a time, right? So that's why when it comes to like those sorts of interactions, I think the relationship should drive what you do. Now, if we're talking about a larger conversation, which I think you are, right? You're talking about, yes, in my life, but also like, how do we make progress? So you mentioned, for example, a young white man who didn't understand all the injustices that happened and how they were true, right? And we know that not only is there a big move to take accurate historical information out of curriculum, but also a move to recruit and indoctrinate young white men into a kind of nationalist ideology.
Is it?
I think we can take steps on those issues in different ways. So whether it's organizations that we're supporting that fight that sort of indoctrination, right? Because there's a lot that's happening in online spaces, on Discords, in like gaming communities. And so folks who work in that space where a lot of that recruitment is happening, how can I support their work, whether it's through monetary or other sorts of support, right? So do I think that that's important to do? Yes. Am I going to argue with every young white man who says something inaccurate on my social media? No. So both of those things can be true.
First off, I really like how she was already thinking about how to put the use of the mirroring that I shared with her earlier to use. She's earnest in her desire to have a conversation, but I'm starting to also see how she might come off as eager to teach rather than eager to connect and build relationship. She wants progress and doesn't see how it can happen if people don't listen to her point of view. Not that she's saying that explicitly, but if we enter conversations wanting to convince, people can feel that and will likely become even more entrenched. And I get it in some ways, but as you listen to this next segment, notice how I turn her attention towards herself and finding her community as the place to take action. That's where she has the most control. And sometimes working on shining our own light can bring clarity more than shouting about the dark.
Folks who do movement work, folks who do liberation work, they will tell you that elections are about choosing your opponent. If Harris had been elected, there would still be work to do. There was a lot of organizing that needed to happen, right? She would not have done all things that all movements wanted to happen. There were a lot of gaps that she could have addressed that she didn't, right? So my point be, I'm not trying to bash her at all. I'm trying to say it wouldn't have been the salve, the like be all to end all, whew, we're done working moment, right? And so if that's the case and the arc of like liberation work and rights and justice work continues, regardless of the minutia that happens in the political space, I don't agree with people that the vote doesn't matter and that they're both the same, but I can see why some people feel disenfranchised figuratively, and some of them literally, and very disenchanted. We have to be willing to continue to listen to people, even if we don't agree. But we also need to get in touch with our community, find our lane, and get to work if you haven't already been, and stay at work and use this time to mobilize people and money and resources if you have been in this work. So I hope that helps you think about like how we make the progress.
When?
It happens on multiple levels. What do you think?
Yeah, I think I am still struggling because I think I want more options. And maybe it's because you had that moment post-election where you're grieving, you know, and you're feeling through all your emotions. And then you're like, okay, now I've got something. And then rage come on. That one feels like really motivated. And now I feel like I want to do something and get active and like be more open with what like I actually believe and like maybe my experience, like, or even others that I'm familiar with, that some of these people, they're not going to encounter either because they're not putting themselves in those places or they don't want to hear like another side. So I think there's that part of me that like, okay, like I'm looking for all the opportunities I can to try to make progress.
Well, where's your political home or where's your social issue home?
And maybe that's something that I need to figure out, like what's local. I think working in 911 dispatch, there's just so much burnout that it's usually focusing on survival most of the time. The men, when I'm off, it's like, okay, self-care, like I don't have a lot of social energy to try to get out there and be more involved. But I think maybe that would be something that I need to try to look into and figure out how I can help contribute.
So I would encourage you, find your lane, find your political home, find a social issue home. And you'd be surprised how many organizations are having Zoom calls now. So yes, it could be a local org, but it also could be national.
Now we're getting to the heart of things. Alex starts to talk about her grief and feminine rage. Those are not light feelings, and she's not alone in so many ways. And if we can hear what she said before and the questions that she asked in this context, then we can understand her more. She's pissed about what's happened and feels helpless. She's coming to me hoping I can tell her how to convince those at her work and online. And her final question is heartfelt and personal. She wants to know how to process this rage, and in some ways, she's looking for permission that it's okay. I try to give her some tips to work through the feelings and also help her get in touch with a, you know, I don't know it all approach, which can help us lead with curiosity if we can manage our big emotions.
How do you process the feelings that you go through? Like, what do you have these suggestions? If I'm getting really passionate or angry or something, it's super upsetting to me that's being said. How do I either process that and then figure out a way to also respond respectfully, like mitigate that for the benefit of the dialogue?
Yeah, I think acknowledging that you're having an emotional reaction that's big and that might make it hard to engage right now is the first thing. So like, feel what you're feeling, basically. And so if you're feeling what you're feeling and you're not able to continue, you could say to the person, I'm having this reaction. I'm going to need to step away. If we could continue this later, let's. Like, you could name it, right? Another thing you could do is also just to know that those emotions will pass. And so if it's like a dialogue that's happening among a group of people and someone says something and you can literally feel your face flushing and your heart racing and you can feel it, but you're not going to have to speak right away. You can focus on taking deep breaths. You get to feel what you feel. I don't think we should shove our feelings down, but know that there's an arc and that they won't last forever. And if we can do deep breathing, I don't know if you do any deep breathing exercises.
No.
You know, we can do diaphragmatic breathing and we can breathe through those emotions. So like being honest with yourself and then letting yourself feel it and then letting it pass. And I don't think there's anything wrong with being honest about being upset. Some people will say, well, I don't want to let folks who I don't agree with see me upset. Okay, then you might not be ready to engage in an interaction with them because you know that you'll get upset. And if you're embarrassed about being upset, that's only going to make this difficult conversation even more difficult.
Right.
So there I'd say, you know, is there shame in being upset or angry?
No.
I don't think so. So you just get to feel it. And then I would say, you know, process it with folks who can support you. So like the things you're experiencing at work where you're having to swallow in this hierarchical setting, you know, who's your community to decompress? Like, oh my gosh, you won't believe what they said. Oh my goodness, I had to navigate this to get some validation. But also have some self-compassion for yourself. Like, it's not easy to be in a space and an environment like that. And so, yeah, how do you take care of yourself? How do you get validation, self and from others? So I think just thinking about how you support yourself emotionally to be able to process the difficult dialogues is important. I don't know everything. And so maintaining a sense of humility in these conversations, I think, is really key. It's this push and pull between like, oh, okay, I have to have some humility to know that I know some things, but I don't know everything. And there's probably some issue that maybe even this person knows more deeply than I do, where I need to do some learning, where I need to do some reading, where I need, you know, I have gaps. And I try to have that compassion when I enter these conversations, because even just reminding myself of that, I think, can help me not come off as like a know-it-all.
Yeah, and I'd consider that as well, because I don't want it to seem like that, because people don't respond well to that either, and then they just don't want to talk to you. So I think that's really good advice, to have some humility and maybe, and like even you, how you said, ask the question, like near back and ask the question and kind of invite that to show like, oh, I really don't know your experience. Can you please explain to me kind of what you're thinking and feeling?
I think to make progress, we can't just shut people out just because we don't agree, and that it's worth the work to figure out how we have these conversations. So I appreciate you and your questions and your willingness to try to like hang in there and seek advice and try things out. I hope some of what I shared with you today was helpful.
Yeah, that's very helpful.
Awesome. Awesome. Thanks, Alex. And thank you, everyone, for engaging and listening to our conversation about difficult conversations. If you have a conversation that you want to have, that you want support with on air, reach out at stories@raisingequity.org and follow me on social media, Dr. Kira Banks, on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok.
Do you like what we're doing with the Kira Banks podcast? So do we. And we'd like to keep this podcast ad-free. If you like what you hear and want to hear more, please consider supporting us and our work at kirabanks.com/support. Have tea to spill or something you want to ask Dr. Banks? Contact her at kirabanks.com/stories or stories@raisingequity.org. Thanks again for listening.